comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I do appreciate it. And for those of you who are joining us for the very first time, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. If you are joining us for the first time, you will not be aware of something that you need to be aware of, and that is that we have a free weekly newsletter, and I would like to invite you to subscribe. You can unsubscribe anytime you want. It truly is free. There are no strings attached, and we don't share your email address with anybody. We don't rent it out, lease it, loan it, anything like that, okay? So go over to kevinsmithshow.com. That's my website. You'll see in big red letters K-Files E-Zine. Click on that and subscribe. Takes a few seconds and you're in. And speaking of that, we sent out this week's edition, the HTML version, went out today. The text version we anticipate will go out tomorrow, okay? So we had to split it up this time because of time constraints. But anyway, if you're subscribed, you either got it today or you'll get it tomorrow. Now, it was a couple of weeks ago we had Dr. Joseph Farrell with us. And then, I don't know, I wish I could remember. I should have looked it up. But it's been a couple of months, 3 months, 4 months. But fairly recently, we had Richard Hoagland with us. Now, when Dr. Farrell was on with us, he was talking about evidence for the cosmic war. And he talked about the exploded planet theory, and he talked about some of the writings and work of Richard Hoagland, and proposed that we do a show where both he and Richard Hoagland would be with us. Well, guess what? Tonight's the night. They are both on the line with me, and in just a moment they are going to join us. And this should be really one of the pinnacle shows of all the shows we've ever done, because we've got two of the brightest, smartest guys that we've ever interviewed on the show with us tonight, and it's going to be very, very interesting. So I recommend, if you haven't done so, go ahead and get your popcorn ready and call your friends and tell them to tune in either here on computer with kevinsmithshow.com or one of our affiliate internet stations, or if they live in one of the cities where we have radio coverage, they need to tune in on the radio. We're on AM, we're on FM, and in some places shortwave. So there's no excuse for folks to miss this show tonight, all right? And you'll be sad if you do, so don't miss a second of it. Now, a couple of things very quickly. If you have not done so, as I said, be sure you subscribe to the K-Files e-zine. Also, you've been thinking about becoming a member. Well, you see, if you're a member, here's what happens. This is just one of the things that happens. If you miss a show and you say, gee, I really wish I could have heard that show, as a member you can, because all you do is go into the members area and retrieve it. It's there. So be sure, if you haven't joined, that you do so, and that you do so tonight, okay? There's no reason not to. And it's just like the K-Files e-zine. You can unsubscribe when you want to. All right. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dr. Joseph Farrell and Richard C. Hoagland.
Ten, nine. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles and free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today.
Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
You know, there's never been a better time for you to start your own broadcast. I know there are a lot of paranormal investigators. I know there are a lot of people who are paranormal experiencers who want to have their own broadcast. Well, now you can right here at Steel Eye Media Network. It is within your grasp. You can do it, and we're waiting to hear from you. Give us a call today at 1-800-318-1008.
This is Charles Hall.
Hi, this is nuclear physicist Stanton Friedman.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Hardcastle.
This is Jason Martell, researcher into the ancient astronaut theory.
You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show, the number one talk show choice of many galaxies.
It is my very, very distinct pleasure and honor and privilege to welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, Dr. Joseph Farrell and Richard C. Hoagland. Richard, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Kevin. You know, and, it's interesting, Joseph and I are running for something.
No, so but Joseph, welcome back to the show as well.
Thank you, Kevin. Great to be here.
No, I don't think you're running for something. I hope I didn't make it sound like that. We may all be running from something, it sounds like. But anyway, the reason I say that, and I meant it, is that neither of you gentlemen ever lets us down. When you're on this show, you bring us some really mind-expanding and mind-bending information. And I expect that that's what will happen tonight. The last time you were with us, Richard, we talked about your book, Dark Mission, The Secret History of NASA. And then Dr. Farrell was with us and talked about the cosmic war. And he talked about how a lot of the information just really sort of goes hand in glove. The two subjects, the two books, just sort of go hand in glove. And you know, one of the things I still get email about, and Dr. Farrell, you and I talked about this and mentioned it in our interview a couple of weeks ago, was Richard, when you told us about 3CPO.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I really, there's so much here, I'm not really sure how to dive into this thing, but let's start with this.
Well, let me make a proposition.
All right.
I'll make you a deal. You can call me Richard if you call Dr. Farrell Joseph.
You got a deal. Joseph? Is that okay with you?
That's fine.
All right.
And we'll both call you Kevin.
That sounds good.
We'll both call you Kevin.
So let's start with this whole idea of the possibility that there was a cosmic war and that there is leftover evidence of it. And I'll just kick the ball into your court and you guys decide who's going to hit it.
Oh boy. He's really making it hard on him, Joseph. Well, look, I've been at this for a quarter of a century. I don't look like it when I look in the mirror, I hope, but I have. And of all the things that I've discovered on this road that I never imagined when I was a NASA consultant or I was, you know, Walter Cronkite's science advisor during the Apollo program, I mean, the last thing, guys, that I ever thought I would discover is a robotic head of an obviously artificial being, a non-organic robotic-type being lying in a crater on the moon. I mean, that just was not on, you know, if I'd listed, you know, the 10 best, most remarkable things that I ever imagined I would discover, that was definitely a number 12 or 20 or not on the paper at all. So that, to me, has opened up a whole Pandora's box of implications. Because if you look back through our literature, which Joseph does with great alacrity in terms of ancient literature, the mythologies, comparative mythology, his seeking for what he calls the paleo-ancient civilization that may have spawned us and what we have become, it's obvious that this aversion, this fear of artificial beings, starting in the modern era with Mary Shelley and Frankenstein, may in fact have a very, very, very ancient, almost archetypal root, which we may have discovered in C-3PO on the moon. Joseph?
Well, I have to agree with that, and let me kind of put things for people that may not be familiar with my approach to things. Is one of the things that intrigued me about your work was its clear implications in terms of ancient texts, and that's more or less how I approach things. But I want to make it clear that when I'm doing so, I'm not really following what I think is the Velikovsky mold. In other words, I don't try to put the texts in a primary position of directing, you know, what I conclude. I try to examine the text rather from a position of, can they be harmonized with the latest that we know in modern science? And I think on that basis, yes, they can. But again, I don't put them in a primary role. I put them in a secondary role. But everything that you've uncovered in Dark Mission with the artificial ruins on the moon and of course all the work that's been done by the Enterprise mission over the years with Mars, that so perfectly dovetails with what the ancient texts, in my opinion, are really saying, namely that we were dealing with some sort of very, very ancient, very sophisticated civilization that was interplanetary in nature and that was based right here in our own celestial neighborhood. And one of the most striking things about the text, I think, that's very corroborative of the work that you've done over the years is that they pinpoint with almost amazing clarity to the moon and Mars as being two bases of that civilization. So it's, you know, when you find C-3PO's head on the moon, that kind of puts the nail in the coffin.
All right, now, for those who don't know, and there are people who don't know, we're heard in 95 countries, and we have new listeners every day. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about C-3PO, and I'm pretty sure they're thinking Star Wars here. But, Richard, why don't you just sort of quickly bring us up to date about what this is with 3CPO?
You know, Kevin, that's actually not far off the mark, because part of where the research has gone, since you and I did the last show we did together, is that George Lucas and Star Wars is being drawn into the plot. Remember, the premise of my latest book with Mike Barrett, Dark Mission, The Secret History of NASA, is that the space program that you think you know, you don't know at all. It's a program which has been fed to you like a false front Western town with props, with misdirection, with little arranged skits, with little scenarios, but all the good stuff, all the real stuff, the really important things that our tax dollars have gone through NASA to find have been hidden from the American people by law. And we start out Dark Mission by explaining with the actual language of the Congressional Space Act of 1958, which established NASA under the executive branch of the United States government, under the president in the White House, as part of the executive branch. We set out in the actual documentation of the law that NASA, in fact, is not, as everybody has been told, a civilian space agency, that it, in fact, is a military agency. It is a branch of the Department of Defense subject to all the national security injunctions and rules we have come to know and love since 1947. The next step of this logical explanation of what NASA really is that back in the 1950s and early 60s, 59, 60, 61, there was a study that was commissioned, newly created military space agency under the disguise of a civilian agency, of the very think tank in Washington called Brookings, the Brookings Institution. And what NASA did in farming out a contract to Brookings was to basically ask this most prestigious think tank at that time, which is well known now all over the world, and you see it in all the political shows, and you see pundits talking about, you know, its studies in various areas of economics and geopolitics and technology and you name it. What Brookings was asked to do by NASA back in 59 was to basically study the impact of a fledgling projected space program on American society. I mean, isn't it interesting that in the 50s, our political leaders actually wanted to know the impact, the repercussions of something that government might do? I mean, what's that the current administration had someone study what would have happened in the Middle East before we went, and, well, you know where that's going. Anyway, so NASA is you know, commissions Brookings with a government contract to study the effect of space, space exploration, space development, space technology, space economics, space everything on a broad cross-section of American society. As part of its study, it was specifically tasked to look at the impact and the implication of if NASA were to discover extraterrestrial life. Or, and this is really intriguing to me, because it's vindication of what I've been saying for the last 25 years now, it projects that even if it didn't discover life, i.e. living beings, you know, spaceships, flying saucers, radio waves coming in from some other star, carrying telephone messages for NASA, what would happen if it discovered intelligent artifacts left by intelligent beings nearby on neighboring planets in the solar system, including the moon? And what Brookings responds back to NASA after a year of study involving a very prestigious list of blue ribbon experts in a variety of fields, from military to government, science, engineering, business, law, international relations, UN people, you know, foreign diplomats, including polls that they ran with various focus groups of just, quote, ordinary folks. Their conclusion was, and I'm paraphrasing now because the full text is in Dark Mission, it's basically the Jack Nicholson line. If you find it, you have to hide it because they, meaning us, can't take it. Brookings' bottom line to NASA was, if you find evidence of not only ETs, but even their ruins right next door, you can't tell them the truth because they'll go crazy. You know, cats and dogs living together, that great line from Bill Murray and Ghostbusters and all that. The whole point was that NASA began from the get-go, from the inception, to lie to us on what Americans think is the most important thing they are out to find, i.e. evidence that we are not alone, and as we demonstrate with the luminous documentation over and over and over again in Dark Mission, their real mission has been to find it, but to hide it because they have been told we can't take it. So you flash forward the film. I'm looking at all the Apollo data that came back from, you know, all six missions. I'm looking at Apollo 17 imagery, and I find one cold winter evening here in Albuquerque, sitting at my desk in front of this gorgeous view looking out to Sandia's, I find this remarkable robotic head in a crater on the moon from the Apollo 17 mission, and it looks for all the world like C-3PO right out of George Lucas's Star Wars, including the double irised eyes, one on the left and one on the right. And I've got in the book comparisons of the photograph taken from NASA, from the Apollo mission from 17, side by side, you know, that official photograph side by side with C-3PO, you know, our favorite robot from Star Wars, maybe R2-D2 is the favorite. But C-3PO is, you know, the android butler that you never had but you wish you did. And these two things look identical. So now we flash forward the film a little more, and we look at the role of George Lucas. Is this all just an incredible coincidence, or is it possible that George Lucas, as part of Brookings, because if I go back in time, part of the Brookings report basically said to NASA and to the government and to the world, look, the American people are not going to be able to handle this, again, I'm paraphrasing, unless they are prepared. And it had a whole series of things it recommended for preparation, cultural preparation, including films, movies, television, news accounts, you know, science stories, et cetera, to get all of us prepared so we wouldn't go run amok if we found out, when we found out, that we are not alone and there used to be other guys out there who were first. So who is George Lucas really? Well, my proposition, which is going to come to air in less than a month on Sci-Fi, in a two-hour Sci-Fi special that NBC was here shooting over the last month, is that George Lucas is one of a handful of directors, producers in Hollywood, the creme de la creme of Tinseltown, that had been tapped on the shoulder decades ago to help prepare the American people and the world for the eventual realization that we are not alone. And it's no accident that C-3PO on the moon looks like C-3PO in Star Wars, because in fact that was George's raison d'etre. He was part of the preparation, and it will come out in due time. And the reason for this upcoming special in less than a month, I think it's going to come out on Sci-Fi on the evening of May 18th, is because that's a couple days from the time that in the American market his next film, Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull, premieres nationwide. And, of course, that introduces a whole other segment of George's illustrious career, because basically Lucas has done two films in his entire life. He has done Star Wars, you know, chapter 27 now, I think we're on, and he's done Indiana Jones. And what is Star Wars? It's all about an ancient civilization in a galaxy far, far away that I think is, in fact, a fictional form of what we have uncovered in the NASA data. And what is Indiana Jones? It is the story of Joseph's search for the paleo-ancient high-tech civilization that is going to connect with that civilization in a galaxy far, far away. And so when you say it's C-3PO, smile, Kevin, because you're not kidding.
Well, I tell you what, I went to your website today and just looked again at the photo you've got of that robotic head laying in the crater on Mars, I mean on the moon, and every time I look at it, I'm just in awe. It's like, man, I can't believe it, but there it is. And, you know, it's not one of those things that you look at and say, well, it could be, but, you know, that might be a shadow. It's not that at all.
No, and look, it has a brilliant red stripe around the chin area.
Mm-hmm.
If you had a race of robots, artificial sentient beings that could do your bidding, you know, and they're basically worker beings. Some of them drive taxis, some of them fly spacecraft, some of them are communications. How would you, if you're a normal human being amongst all these robots, know which class you're dealing with? Obviously with a color code. And there's no way that brilliant red stripe could be caused by anything on the, you know, UV radiation exposed surface of the moon other than a deliberate design by the manufacturers, the designers, whoever built this thing. And it was a mark of who this being once was in the sense of what class of robot he belonged to, or she. So, no, I think that the thing that really excites me is the question, what happened to that head after the photograph was taken? Did Gene Cernan and Harrison Schmitt, the two astronauts on Apollo 17, after they took the photographs, did they go, let themselves down into that crater, pick up the head, put it in a canvas sample bag, bring it back to the lunar module, bring it back to Earth? And the government has spent 40-some years trying to figure out how to talk to it, how to turn it on, how to make the memory circuits energize and spit out the information that is probably an extraordinary history of humans relating to other beings all across the galaxy. I mean, there is literally no end to the possibilities once you nail down that they really did find something extraordinary and out of place.
I'll tell you one thing I cannot imagine. I cannot imagine they would have left it.
Well, if they saw it. See, this to me would be the world's biggest tragedy. If, in fact, when they were taking those panoramas, they just didn't notice it because there's just too much there to notice. But I just have the suspicion that, no, it was brought home. And it's possible, and I don't, you know, say this with categorical certainty, as we can't say very much in this area with categorical certainty, but I think I can venture a speculation that maybe the president's sudden declaration that we have to go back to the moon after 40 years of not doing anything with the moon in the middle of a war on terror. I mean, what could be farther from George Bush's perception and importance and raison d'etre for his presidency than going back to the moon? And yet in January of 2004, that's exactly what he did, egged on by Dick Cheney, we all know. So what is that all about? Why do we have now the birthing of a second space race? Why did Putin the other day not only announce adventurous new plans for the Russian space program, including a major new spaceport and the commissioning of a major new launch system, but he's also announced that he's going to be companioning the Russian efforts to go to the moon with India. India, gentlemen. Joseph, tell us, why would he want to go back to the moon with India?
Well, my take is kind of like Richard's, although I think there is an element where our research kind of dovetails independently, and if I may get into that just a bit. Richard's over the years has talked about the ritual alignments that occur in NASA missions. And to do this sort of thing, and he brings this up again at some length in Dark Mission as well, Ian Mike Barra. And I think what we have to conclude from this is that there is at work inside of America's space program, and therefore, presumably, inside of Russia's, inside of Europe's, inside of Japan and China's, that there has to be a group of people that are very familiar with this esoteric tradition, with these ancient texts.
Okay, I tell you what. I hate to interrupt, but I have to because the break is taking over and it will automatically cut our mics off here in just a few seconds. So let's do this. When we come back from the break, I want to start right there with you, Joseph, and I want to hear why India. All right? We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, folks. Don't go away. It keeps getting better, all right?
I keep the faith. Anytime you need some help from me, I'll be there. I keep the faith. Now you are on the needle again. I was waiting for you. You did it again. I said, ooh, ooh, yeah, what's going on? Trying not to be the one I trust.
try. You need some loving and peace in your mind. You need to chill out. It's not easy to find. I wanna help you to find your line. This is a show time, babe. I keep the faith. Wasting my time, this is killing friendship, committing a crime. I said, ooh, ooh, yeah, what's going on? Crying is not me, God, I know why. You are my lover and the one of a kind. I need you, come on, let me be in your mind. I'm gonna help you find your line. This is your showtime.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
We are back, and my guests this evening are Joseph Farrell and Richard Hoagland. When we cut away for break, gentlemen, Joseph Farrell was just about to tell us why India, with reference to what you said, Richard, about the Russians have just announced that they're going to partner with India in the new space race. So I'm sorry I had to interrupt, but Joseph, go ahead.
Well, the significance of India, as I was mentioning before the break, if we examine the ritual alignments work that Richard's done over the years with Enterprise Mission and that he and Mike Barra put in Dark Mission, we have to come to the conclusion that there has to be a group within NASA that is very familiar with esoteric tradition, and that this is one of the, perhaps not primary, but at least very important guiding principles with their timing of space missions and so on and so forth. But the significance of India, then, in this respect, is to kind of tie it up with the question of the exploded planet hypothesis, is that if you examine some of the Vedic texts, which I do in the Cosmic War, and construe the chronology that is in those texts in a literal sense, then it's very peculiar that you end up with a date in those texts of about 3.4 million years ago for the occasion of some cosmic catastrophe, namely a celestial body blowing up. Now, the significance of that is that in Dr. Tom Van Flandern's original version of that hypothesis, you have a date for that event occurring at about 3.2 million years ago. So in other words, the text and the modern scientific theory align very carefully and very closely. So we have to conclude, I think, as a speculative possibility, that somebody in the Russian space program is equally well aware of some of these ancient texts and traditions and their significance then in terms of space programs. And, you know, the partnership with India is just, you know, that just sends all sorts of red flags to me that this may indeed be what's going on with them.
I mean, Kevin, the bottom line is, if we're the outside guys, you know, the folks that are paying for all this, and the Russian people are the outside guys who are paying for the Russian program, and the Japanese people are the outside guys who are really paying for the Japanese program, and the Chinese, you know, citizens, they're the outside guys for the Chinese space program, and the inside guys know exactly what we put in all our books, that the history that we think we have lived is not history at all. It's made up fairy tales to conceal who we really are, how old we really are, what we really used to do, where we really came from, what life used to really be like, the capabilities of the human species, the extraordinary, you know, species that we really are. And we're not supposed to know any of that because knowledge is power, and somebody sure as damn well doesn't want us to have power that any more than we have now. In fact, they're trying to take away what minimal power that we were given 200 plus years ago in the American Revolution. Then it's perfectly obvious that if by whatever means it comes into the public domain that there are ancient ruins on the next door neighbor, the moon.
Right.
And all the space programs, you know, take a decade or so to kind of gin themselves up using conventional rocket technology to run back as fast as possible and basically stake their claim. I mean, we're talking something that makes the American gold rush in the 1800s, you know, look like a small class picnic. There are incalculable riches on the moon. They're not gold and silver and nickel and all that junk. There's knowledge, technology, physics, biology. There's the knowledge of how to live forever, for instance. There's knowledge of unlimited energy. And as Joseph in his, you know, various books traces out, you know, with this unlimited knowledge and unlimited power comes unlimited mischief.
Yep.
And we've gone down this road before, and we appear to be going down it again, except it's not all of us going down the road. It's a tiny handful of elites, comparatively speaking, that speak in their own code. I mean, I was so amused when the Japanese put their Greyhound bus-sized spacecraft a few months ago into orbit around the moon. And then a couple months later, the Chinese did the same. And there's this weird code going on back and forth in the public press between them. And suddenly you have a Japanese minister. Remember this, Kevin? A Japanese minister coming out and making all kinds of bizarre UFO comments. You know.
I remember. I think it was the Minister of Defense, was it not?
Yes, and no one could figure out what the hell was going on. Well, obviously, he'd seen some of the unvarnished pictures taken by the Japanese space probe of these gargantuan mega engineering ruins on the moon, and it was a holy S moment. And so the language is in code. We're not supposed to know. So as I told Nori when I was doing Coast one night, you know, every number that ticks up on Amazon, every book that's sold of Dark Mission or of Joseph's books or any of a bunch of other people, you know, Graham Hancock and John, you know, Anthony West and all those of us that are doing the real stuff, every time folks out there buy a book, it's basically like they're voting in this presidential campaign, in this primary. They're voting for the truth in something that is much more meaningful, ultimately, up to and including the so-called pocketbook issues. I mean, look, you want to keep paying $4, you know, or $7 or $10 a gallon for gas? Just let these guys keep this technology secret and hidden and only part of the in crowd. The only way to change where we're going is to make this part of the general mainstream conversation.
Yep. I'm into that.
All right, now, Joseph, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
When you saw the picture of 3CPO, Was it before or after you wrote The Cosmic War?
Oh, boy, that's an excellent question, Kevin. And I think Richard will kind of agree with me in this. When I was writing that book and the previous book that I wrote prior to that, which is a book called SS Brotherhood of the Bell, I did not know. I had, of course, followed Richard's work over the years rather closely and listened to his presentations on Coast to Coast and other radio shows. But I did not at that time know that he was working on a sequel to Monuments of Mars. And so when his book came out, I have to tell you, Kevin, I read that thing, and I read it twice, more or less all in one sitting, because I just really could not believe the amount of independent corroboration to some of my own research that Richard was coming up with, and particularly when I found that photo of the robot head there. It's just clear and unmistakable that you are looking at something artificial. And, you know, that, it just literally made my jaw drop. And that's when I decided I have to go back and read this book again and take even closer notes on it. Because, you know, the other thing that really blew me away, and I have to mention this as well, and that is what Richard mentioned about NASA's military nature. That was one of the things to me that really kind of cinched the case, as far as I'm concerned, that he's been making over the years. That, you know, this is an agency with a covert agenda. And at that point, everything else just kind of fell into place, all of the esoteric and ritual alignments that he's been talking about, because, again, my own research seemed to corroborate so much of that and do so in a completely independent track. It's like he's been working his way from the science aspect and the modern space program back in history, and I've been trying to work my way forward in history from ancient texts, and we sort of have met in the middle.
Kevin, it's still amusing because Joseph, it frightens me at times, because it's like I'll be working on something, then I find out, you know, in an email or in a conversation that he's working on exactly the same thing, and we've never compared notes.
That's true.
And we followed the basic evidence, we come to the same conclusions, we've indicted the same suspects, and yet we've never had a conversation. It's eerie to have somebody, you know, I think he's got some device up there in South Dakota where he just sits there and spins the dials and he kind of can read minds, you know, it's kind of remote viewing with technology or something.
Well, you know, this is the interesting thing, too, if I can kind of jump in here, Richard, and that is, Kevin, we never really started emailing each other until, what, about 6 to 7 months ago, Richard, or 8 months?
Yeah, Tim Ventura put us together.
Yeah.
You know, he basically said, look, you guys, you know, you should know each other because obviously you've been writing things. He saw it as an objective observer. Tim is, have you ever had Tim on the show, Kevin?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God, you should interview him. He's the head of the
Department of
Anti-Gravity Research. And he knows, you know, a lot of people, and he's keeping track of the serious researchers. So he basically said one day to me, he says, you really should drop a line to Joseph Farrell. And I said, Joseph who? You know, Joseph is kind of like, he is so modest and self-effacing. The thing I've discovered now about Joseph is that he writes faster than I can read. He's writing books faster than I can keep up.
As a matter of fact, you know, I received The Cosmic War in the mail and read it, invited him to be on the show after I had read it for the third time, and actually was still reading it for the third time. And there was so much there that I really needed to read it more than once before I did the show, and just so that I would be ready. And then found out when I invited him to be on the show, he already had another book out. So.
And he just sent another one to the publisher.
I just sent another one off to the publisher.
We need to find out his secret.
It's a good thing my ego is not invested in the number of books that I put out.
Gentlemen, we have to take a break. It's going to take over again. When we come back, I want to get into the exploded planet thing. Because that is really, I think, important for us to understand. We'll be back, folks, with Joseph Farrell and Richard C. Hoagland right after this.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
We're back, and we're talking with Joseph Farrell and Richard Hoagland, and gentlemen, I want us to, we've got a few minutes here before the top of the hour, and I want us to get into the exploded planet. Now, there's a mystery about it, to me, but then I'm not a physicist. If the planet exploded, and of course the theory is that there was a large planet and that it exploded, and that is what is the asteroid belt, the remains of the exploded planet. All right. it would seem to me that if it explodes, it would be sending ejecta in 360 degrees. Mm-hmm. And so we would see not a belt, but we would see debris throughout the solar system and throughout the orbits instead of an asteroid belt. How does that happen?
Very simple. Let's take just two pieces of debris, okay? Let's imagine our planet explodes and it sends one piece of debris directly up at 90 degrees to the orbit of the planet.
Okay.
And another piece of debris in plane in the orbit of the planet. And we'll assume it's going forward along with the planet's motion around the sun.
Okay.
The debris piece that is moving forward will have the velocity of the explosion added to the velocity of the planet originally orbiting the sun, right?
That's right.
So it probably will exceed escape velocity from the solar system and will disappear forever. It no longer will hang around. Okay?
All right.
The piece which is going straight up at 90 degrees will obviously come back down at some point in the plane of the solar system in which all the other planets are orbiting. And it will go below the plane of the planet's original orbit, come back up, and if you think of it like a hula hoop tipped at 90 degrees to another hula hoop,
okay,
it will continue to orbit in this 90-degree plane until it runs into something. A planet, more debris, the sun itself. So its lifetime is measured in a very brief few, probably thousands of years, not millions, because it's going to run into, it's kind of like running across freeway traffic during rush hour. What are your odds of surviving how many rushes across the freeway, particularly if you close your eyes?
Yeah.
Now, the debris that stays in view, that remains with us, is the debris, if I extend my model to include one other piece, so we have three pieces now.
Okay.
That was ejected at 180 degrees to the forward motion of the planet. It was ejected backwards. That will drop into a slightly lower orbit around the sun, but it will be almost as a circular orbit, and it will continue in the same path as the original planet over and over and over again for millions of years in a stable configuration. So in essence, you're talking about celestial mechanics sorting. We don't see the debris that got wiped out or escaped. We only see the debris that was left behind.
Okay, now, Joseph, in your study of the ancient texts,
mm-hmm.
do you find evidence for an exploded planet?
Oh, yes, definitely.
I mean, has he, Kevin? That is really the $64,000 million question.
Good.
That's what's so stunning. Because it was like written by historians down through the ages. It's not like we have, you know, to only figure this stuff out from the celestial mechanics. We've got actual witnesses who wrote it down or who spoke it, you know, because the original histories are probably spoken. And at some point it was written down, and Joseph has got a line on all of those.
Yeah, the texts, Kevin, are really kind of almost overwhelming. You know, if you know what you're looking for, if you follow what I call the catastrophist school of interpreting ancient texts from a physics point of view, most of the people in that school have, I think, made a fairly solid case that when we're looking at ancient names for planets such as Tiamat and so on, you know, the Babylonian epic between Tiamat and Marduk, that great struggle, well, these are also names not only of gods, but of planets. And so you have the whole rise of this school of interpretation that, you know, these wars of the gods were metaphors for the celestial collisions that they were observing, that people on Earth were observing. Now, what I've done is simply gone one step beyond that school and kind of looked at Dr. Van Flandern's hypothesis a little more closely that he outlines in his book, what is it, Richard? I can't think of the title right off the top of my head. But in his book, he comes up to certain models to explain this event, and of course, collision is one of them. But one of the most interesting things to me, you know, sitting from the standpoint not of a scientist, but of someone that's interested in ancient texts, is that he comes to a model after he goes through a bunch of others, and you can kind of sense a little bit of discomfort on his part in some of the models that he's proposing for an explosion by natural causes. And he comes at one point in his book to say that, well, another model, and we have to consider it as a possibility, is that it may have been exploded by means of, and these are his words, deliberate action. Now, when I read that, you know, things kind of fell into place, because deliberate action means either an act in a war or some sort of technological accident gone wrong. And once we've said that, then we have to imply a technology based on a physics that's sufficient to do that. And that's where I really kind of take off in the cosmic war, because I try and subject a variety of texts from Egypt and Sumer and so on to this type of examination. And I come to the conclusion that it's written all over those texts that these are not descriptions of a metaphor for collisions, but that there is a technology at work that is actually the cause of these wars. And it's very clear once you read the text from that point of view, and I think it makes better sense of the text in the long run than does the collision metaphor model.
And what technology are we talking about?
Well, before we get to that, Tom's book, Joseph, by the way, if you Google, which I did, that's the fun part of being interviewed, you know, together. One of us can do research while the other is talking.
While the other's talking.
Exactly. Tom's book is called Dark Matter, Missing Planets,
New Comets. That's right.
And it's available at Amazon and all good bookstores. Look, Tom is an incredible scientist. He's a very good friend. I've known him for 20-some, 30-some years. And what's really cool, Joseph, is that before I knew you, I was one day having a conversation with Tom about, okay, so this is before I found my own evidence that there was an exploded planet.
Right.
And I was saying, okay, look, put up or shut up. If this damn thing happened, how did it happen?
Right.
And he looked at me and he said, maybe there was a war. I mean, this was light years before Cydonia, before any of the work that we've got, you know, attesting to a high-tech civilization out there, ruins and all that, before you'd written one word on this. I mean, you were, I think at that time, you were back at Oxford.
Studying
to be, you know, whatever. Tom Van Flandern was at the cutting edge and was prepared as a real scientist to consider the outrageous idea that some super weapon of mass destruction wielded by some extraterrestrial race had blown up the planet that he'd identified in the celestial mechanics as having formerly orbited between Earth and Jupiter.
You know, we had him on the show within this last year, and he mentioned that. He talked about that. And I remember having an aha moment.
Well, because if you follow the science, which, of course, the NUMMIs at NASA and the National Science Foundation, all that are not, I mean, those are bought people. They talk about corruption in politics. There is such overwhelming corruption in the sciences, Kevin.
Yes.
This is the national tragedy.
And by the way, some of the scientists are beginning to groan about that, and it's making the press. Gentlemen, we have to take our top of the hour break. When we come back, we'll have a good long time before we have another break. But it is upon us. And when we come back, I want to get into this aha moment a little bit more and talk about what kind of technology would we be looking at that could explode a planet.
All right, folks. I told you, I warned you, if you miss a single second, you miss a universe of information. We'll be back more with Richard Hoagland and Joseph Farrell right after this break.
Hey, this is Jeff Bird, thanking the members of the GarageBand Radio Network for all the support you gave my first single, Silver Plated. You're now about to hear my new song, Before Kings, released exclusively to GarageBand member stations.
still. You've been searching for the one. She's something special, and now you are under her spell. Come to find out she's everything you've ever wanted. How can it be? Takes your breath away every time you see her face on the big screen.
Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
We are back, and my guests this evening are Richard C. Hoagland and Joseph P. Farrell, and we're talking about the possibility of a cosmic war and exploded planet and the evidence of those events happening. Now, when we cut away for the break, and we'll open the telephone lines in just a moment, folks. Just hold on. We are going to open the telephone lines, but I got to hear this. And I think you want to hear this, too. Before we cut away, gentlemen, we were talking about what kind of technology could do this. Who wants to dive into that?
I'll let Richard dive in first, and then I'll follow with my own swan dive.
All right.
This is Kevin. This is a really cool example of how Joseph's work and my work has converged from two radically different starting positions. Because, of course, what I've been looking at, because I left the straight world with, you know, NASA and Cronkite and all that, and went over to the crazies, looking at the possibility that we've been lied to in almost everything relating to who we are and what's out there and all that, I tripped over a set of geometry and mathematics in the ruins at Cydonia on Mars that led me to the proposition that there was an extraordinary overarching physics, a physics of reality, of which current physics is a tiny and in many instances deliberately distorted microcosm of a much larger set of laws about how the universe is really functioning. And I call this hyperdimensional physics because it transcends the three spatial dimensions that we are inhabiting and our audience is inhabiting tonight, listening to all of us talk about this on the radio and on the internet. And as part of that search for the real physics, I came to the conclusion that there were certain aspects of energy, particularly where it can be gated from, transduced from, conducted from, that are invisible in the equations of mainstream physics as they are currently practiced. And, you know, like Joseph, I was led kicking and screaming to the idea that we're not just dealing with a whole bunch of dumb guys, dumb physicists, historically onward, but we're dealing with a specifically politically suborned process to keep us down on the farm by promulgating two sets of books.
Yep.
The physics which is known to the experts on the inside, which they really use to send spacecraft to the moon and to Mars and, you know, do all kinds of other cool things, including making nuclear weapons. And the physics which is taught in school at a level that if you try to apply it to those real-world problems, it'll never work because it's false physics. So there's a real physics, the real books, and there's like the, you know, the accountant on the take, you know, or the Vegas guy skimming money from the tables. There's the false set of books, and we outside get to see the false set of books, which will never really work, and only the inside guys, the elite, the ones that are somehow have paid their dues and are part of the system that's milking all the rest of us, they get to play with the good stuff. And part of that good stuff, it turns out, because there is no ultimate limit to energy that can be tapped from the hyperdimensional resource, is energy and technology all the way up to and including the ability to blow up your nearest neighborhood planet. Joseph?
Yeah, I have to agree with that, Kevin, and just to kind of put my own two cents in. The conclusion I've come to on the basis of examining all these ancient texts, and I have to say I use pretty much the same type of physics model that Richard is talking about, a kind of a hyperdimensional model that, if you examine the numbers and so on, has definitely tetrahedral properties and characteristics to it. So I came to the same conclusion based on these ancient texts that we are definitely dealing with a story whose main player is this physics, because you have to have a physics that can blow up a planet, and the only way that really you can find anything in the modern literature that is able to do that, at least in theory, is by some hyperdimensional model that's able to manipulate the fabric of space-time locally. So, you know, that's...
Let me interrupt just for a second.
Sure.
Kevin,
yeah.
Do you remember a very famous movie in the 1950s called Forbidden Planet?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Remember that incredible scene in the Crell Laboratory with Walter Pidgeon disowning his monster from the id, that the Crell had created a machine that was able to take consciousness
mm-hmm.
and make it manifest anywhere on the planet or off the planet in the form of energy or instrumentality? Or and ultimately, what does the movie wind up doing? He basically says to Lee, what's his name, the guy who's the captain of the ship, throw that switch and it basically blows up the planet. Well, in that laboratory, there was a scene where they have this monster attacking them, and the monster is gaining its energy from this machine, which is translating Walter Pidgeon's thoughts, his darkest, violent, primitive thoughts, into physical instrumentality, into a physical mechanism that can destroy all of them. And the lead character points to all the dials around this laboratory, and you see them like these old-fashioned ammeters,
right?
Know, with the, you know, and they're lighting up and lighting up and lighting up. And he says, "You have enough power here, you know, 10 times 10 times 10 to the power of infinity." Well, the key to what Joseph is about to tell you is that unlike the current primitive, stupid technology that we have, which we're not doing too well with anyway in our current incarnation, which can only blow up countries and civilization, this energy source, this technology, ultimately is 10 times 10 times 10 to the power of infinity. You want to blow up a star? There's enough energy to do that. You want to wreck an entire galaxy? There's enough energy to do that. You want to change the course of the universe? It all depends on knowing these laws of physics and building the appropriate technology to do that awful, awful thing. And that's the destructive side of
right.
what all these myths and legends are talking about over and over and over again, of which Forbidden Planet was only a modern incarnation of
yep.
the same mythic tale told again and again.
All right,
and,
well...
And one, And well, let me jump in just for one final 2 cents worth. One of the key things that Richard has stressed over and over again, Kevin, is that the key to this physics is, and he, you know, his rule is rotation, rotation, rotation. And if you examine these ancient texts with an eye to this type of physics, that model pops out again and again and again. So in other words, I've come to basically the same conclusion that Richard has on the basis of examining these ancient texts. There is a hidden physics. There is an off-the-books physics, and it's been around for at least 150 years, ever since Maxwell. So in other words, you know, I can't add my amens enough to what he's been saying, because I've come to more or less the same conclusion working from a slightly different data set.
All right, well, it seems to me, and let me throw this in,
okay,
and get your response to it, and then we'll go to the phone lines, because I can assure you they are lighting up. it seems to me then that right now, with the off the books physics, but with I think you called it the stupid physics, Richard, that we know about.
It's giving us $4 a gallon gas.
Yeah. Okay. With this physics, there is a fence around our destructiveness, and that fence is our lack of knowledge.
Right.
And if you remove that by introducing the real physics and teaching people the real physics, the only fence around our destructiveness would be our own moral character, our own ethical fiber, and do we have it?
Now, as a theologian in the group, Joseph, you want to take that one first?
Well, yeah. One of the reasons, Kevin, I've been writing these books is that I've been aware for some time that this destructive potential is certainly there in this physics. And I've been writing basically to warn people, and with the hope that eventually this stuff has got to come out. And by warning of the dire consequences that this stuff has had in the past, I'm hoping somehow that I'll wake people up to the reality of the fact that we have to get a handle on our baser passions to destroy each other for whatever reason we may have. Because once this stuff is out of the bottle, I can assure you, it's much easier to engineer in a certain sense than the most massive hydrogen bomb. And since it's easier to engineer, it's a proliferation nightmare. So I'm hoping that, you know, we can at least raise consciousness a little bit by having these types of discussions and getting people prepared for this reality.
All right, let's go to the phone line.
I don't get a whack at this?
Sure, go ahead.
Thank you.
And caller, hang on, we'll get to you.
I'm a little more Jeffersonian. You know, it's like the reason the American experiment has worked so well for so long. If you look at American history, we've had our ups and downs, we've had our cheats, we've had our awful bad guys, we've had a civil war, we've had carpetbaggers, we've had unions, or union busters, we've had trusts, we've had incredible deceit and deception and greed, but we've also had something which is the antidote to all those human frailties, which is democracy, openness of information. The
right.
ability of people to get an education and ask questions. And what's happened in the last 40, 50 years, since 1947, which is, how long, Joseph, is that? 60-some years?
60 years.
We've had basically a bifurcation of the culture where there is an elite knowledge in the black ops crowd that is known to a handful who have amassed incredible power. And then there's all the rest of us who are deliberately being dumbed down and kept out in left field and are given the illusion we're making progress in many areas when we have made no progress. It's all been a lie. As I say in Dark Mission, you know, with Mike over and over again, the lie is different at every level. Even the promulgators of the lies believe the lies that they've been told. So the only way to root this out is to democratize all this information, because as bad as the bad side of this is, you know, absolute power corrupts, or power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely, which is the old cliche, The reason there's no check and balance is because 99% of people don't even think this is possible. When right. If they were to hear us, if they were to tune in randomly in the last half hour, they would think that Joseph and I are two stark, raving, mad lunatics. Because we're not talking about Reverend Wright. Things that are important in this society. You know, we're talking about blowing up planets. Are you nuts? Well,
you could have at least thrown in something about Britney Spears, you know.
And Paris, and, you know, the usual list. You know, the point is that this same physics, which can be so awful, can also save the human species.
That's right.
The reason that we are all at each other's throats is because there's not enough to go around. The reason there's $4 going into $7 gas is because China is trying to basically democratize a lifestyle to its billion-plus people that we have been enjoying now for the last 50 years, and there isn't enough oil to go around. We need unlimited resources. We need unlimited ways to repair damage to the environment. We need unlimited means of creating food so that we don't have riots in cities because we're making this agonizing decision between ethanol and eating. And so as long as these false dichotomies are kept in front of us, as long as we are being seduced and deluded and distracted, as Obama said the other night, we will never get to the heart of the real problems of the human species. And it's this knowledge and this physics and this insight which can make human beings human again and completely change the equation that led to war a long, long time ago.
Yep.
If you really believe in human beings, you have to believe that ultimately, given this information, the Jeffersonian model will prevail and we will avoid those awful outcomes, provided no one tries to do something in the dark and keep this secret knowledge from all the rest of us.
Yep. You're here.
Okay, let's go to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Okay, we'll go to the next caller. Caller, nope, that caller dropped off. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, yes, it's Kevin from Iroquois Falls, Ontario.
Okay, Kevin, what's on your mind?
Well, first, Kevin, I got to see, you got to have more of these roundtable discussions. These are just great, especially when you got guys the caliber of Richard Hoagland and Joseph Farrell on the air. And Richard C. Hoagland, it's an honor to be on the air with you.
Oh, well, thank you.
And hello again, Joseph. And
hello.
Richard, Mike, I don't know if you alluded to it earlier because my internet went out and I missed a part of the show, but do you think that the world elite, with the help of with extraterrestrial technology, have actually built bases on the moon in the event of a global catastrophe that knocks off 80 or 90% of the population?
The evidence, unfortunately, is mounting that they've done exactly that, and that's one of the reasons why they keep secret and want to keep secret that there are two NASAs. And they want to keep us in this perpetual absurd notion that we have to keep building these stupid, you know, fire sticks that, you know, burn something out the back end to put something small into orbit or go to any other place in the solar system. I mean, look at the current efforts that NASA has been trying to basically achieve returning to the moon, Apollo on steroids. It's an absolute joke. It's nuts that if you think competent engineers can't design a system that can actually work, and yet there are cost overruns. They've now got all kinds of vibrations in the basic rocket. They have vibrations that will kill the astronauts and will fry computers, and, you know, they're going to need more billions of dollars. They're behind schedule, and it's because it's a false front game. It's not the real space program.
Yeah,
so
unless
we democratize this information, you know, the guys that want to get out of Dodge, when they think getting out of Dodge is what they need to do, will split, and they'll leave all the rest of us here to handle all the problems they have created and then left us hanging with.
Yeah, but a lot of the times, you know, some information does leak out, too, at times.
Well, because there is no foolproof system. Mm-hmm. The only way you can keep secrets anymore is to make it look ridiculous. So whenever you see something that's patently ridiculous, ask another question.
Yeah,
am I being fed this information so that I will not follow it?
Yeah, and people today, like I've seen out today with the when they try to cover up stuff like UFOs and stuff that we're not supposed to see when they try to cover up. People know today that when all the cover-up stories, people know that, and I'll take a word from Kevin Smith again, that it's all a bunch of horseradish, you know?
Yeah, the problem is we don't have a critical political mass of people who basically say enough is enough and demand from their political leadership. The only way it's going to happen is if people demand in these elections honesty and stepping up to the bar on these issues as well as the other issues.
All right, Kevin, thank you for the call. The telephone number, ladies and gentlemen, toll-free is 1-800-289-1092. 1-800-289-1092. And that's toll-free throughout the United States and Canada. If you're outside that area, you can send us a flash message. Send it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com, and we'll read it, and we'll ask our guests to comment on it. And with that, let me say that one of the flash messages that we have, it's a little bit long. I can't read all of this, but it says, question for Richard Hoagland. How are you allowed to expose all of this news about the U.S. government's secret plans and not be in danger for your life unless this is also part of the U.S. plan to let... wait a second. To let mavericks like Richard Hoagland continue to expose the news, thus further letting these concepts of aliens sink into the popular culture?
Well, actually, that last idea is kind of what we've tended to think might be going on. I mean, there's got to be a reason why we've actually had some interesting help over the years in, you know, digging up some of this information and putting it out there. And part of it, I think, can be traced back to Brookings. Because remember, there are two sides of the whole Brookings question. There's the side, you know, and Mike and I have called these over the years the owls and the roosters. And the owls are the ones, you know, the inside group that wants to sit on everything, keep it secret, use it only for themselves. And the roosters try to crow about it. And we shamelessly took these two, you know, polar opposite political examples from Chris Carter, you know, in his splendid X-Files and Millennium series. Because Chris Carter got leaked an awful lot of stuff. If you watch X-Files, there's an awful lot of real stuff in X-Files that's masquerading under the guise of fiction. Is there not, Kevin?
Seems to be, yes.
Well, one night, he actually, Chris Carter was on Art Bell show, and Art had me send him some questions, which I did, and Art asked him forthrightly how much of the show is real and how much is fiction, and he contradicted himself 180 degrees from one end of the show to the other. At one point when I was asked the question, he said, oh, it's all made up. He just makes this stuff up. And then, later in the show, he was bragging that he was at some meeting or party or something where an intel guy comes up to him and told him, God, Chris, you know, so much of that stuff is right on to what's really going on. So he was giving us double messages, which, of course, is what X-Files was all about. It's called plausible deniability.
Yep.
So I think this emailer is right on. I think that the reason that we have made significant progress is because there is a faction, the Roosters, that are helping. I mean, I get calls from Intel people all the time giving me stuff. I don't go on the air and talk about it a lot until I can check it out with other sources and, you know, calculations and the data mining that we do and all that. But I'm fed stuff all the time, and the question, of course, is, are you being fed stuff to help? Or are you being fed stuff to make you look like a total idiot? And so we always have to take that into the careful calculation as to what we talk about and when we talk about it. And so it's such a pleasure to have, you know, come together with Joseph, who does things the hard way. You know, he does real research. He doesn't depend on people calling him up and whispering in his ear and saying, oh, this is the way it was. And that's why we've actually decided, Kevin, we could probably talk about this a bit tonight, we decided to collaborate on a new project, and we're kind of just trying to figure out now what our roles are going to be together with Mike Vera on a sequel to Dark Mission. But, you know, Joseph's knowledge and his research and his techniques and his approach to things is so valuable that we just couldn't let him get away. So there will be probably a book in the next year or so that will have all three of our names on it.
Outstanding. All right, let's go to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, where are you calling from?
Hi, Kev. It's Doug from Canada.
Yes, Doug. Doing good.
Great, great. Great to be on with Mr. Hoagland and Mr. Farrell here. Absolutely wonderful guests. Gentlemen, I got to ask you a question here. Isn't it time that the world is allowed to have this information divulged to them? Like, how long can they carry on this cover-up for?
Well, my own two cents is I don't think they can carry it on much longer for a variety of reasons. The political situation in the world is just getting kind of absurd and ridiculous. And secondly, I think the problem is with the advent of the Internet, you have the ability now to look and examine some of this suppressed physics. And, you know, the easiest way to hide something is right out in the open. And that's really what's been going on. So my own two cents worth is I don't think it can be kept hidden too much longer.
All right. Let's go back to the phone line. We've got about 3 minutes here before break. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Dick from Lebanon, Indiana.
Yes, Dick.
I just wanted to say hello to Richard. I don't think he knows who I am.
Oh, yes, I do. Does the word videotape mean anything?
Yes, sir, buddy.
How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. Long time no hear from.
Let me put you on the spot, okay, since you're an old friend.
Okay.
Who are you going to vote for in the primary?
We can't get into politics.
Of course we can.
No, we can't.
We're not voting for Hillary, I can tell you that.
Good man, good man. Okay. Kevin, it's all political. Unless we confront it politically, nothing will ever change.
Well, there's a difference in having a political action movement for disclosure and then talking about our votes for the primary, and I'd prefer us to stick with let's talk about, you know, the science that's involved with this and what we need to do in terms of pressuring Congress and
one of these three people who we're going to elect is going to be president in 2012.
That's true.
That's an extraordinarily relevant point. Why do you think this campaign is being so hard fought so soon, so early? It's because the 2012 election is already here, and 2012 is a key date as part of planetary alignments, part of this physics, part of the Mayan calendar, part of why the bad guys want to get the hell out of Dodge and have made preparations for their little escape hatches. You cannot separate the two, and in a program like yours, you should be confronting head-on. Why aren't these candidates, you know, addressing seriously big issues, planetary issues?
Well, that's not a problem. We can do that, and there's not a single one of them that is confronting those issues.
And why aren't they?
That's a good question.
But nobody's asking the damn questions.
Well, they were asked these questions early on.
No.
Yeah,
no,
they were. They were asked about releasing information about extraterrestrials, and they all deflected those questions.
The UFO question has been so incredibly politicized and devalued that it is no more valid now to ask a candidate about UFOs than it is to ask them about their pastors. It's absolutely absurd. That's not the way to get to the truth.
What's the way to get there?
You've got to ask them about ancient history, real geopolitical problems, alternate energy sources, ways to change the equation so we don't have to keep killing each other over resource wars that, you know, one of the candidates wants to spend the next 100 years in the Middle East fighting wars.
I hate to do it, and I know you'll think it's not real, but the break is taking over, and our mics are going to go dead in a few seconds. We'll be back, folks.
Your lungs.
Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
Welcome back. We are talking this evening with Richard C. Hoagland and Joseph Farrell, and we're talking about some really hairy stuff here and interesting stuff. Cosmic war, an ancient cosmic war that blasted a planet apart out in our solar system, and the remains of which we call the asteroid belt. If you wish to call in, you may do so at 1-800-289-1092. Don't forget that all our members, if you subscribe, if you become a member, you have access to all of the shows. They all get loaded into the members area, all right? So you can go over to kevinsmithshow.com and join the members area. All right, gentlemen, we have a caller waiting for us. So, caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
My name is Andrew, and I'm calling from Hastings, New York.
All right, Andrew. What's on your mind? Are you a first-time caller?
Yes, sir, I am a first-time caller.
Well, you always get applause.
Congratulations
all right.
for getting Thank through.
This government is just so screwed up. There's so much they're not telling us.
You think?
Oh my God! There's so much they're not telling us. My friend Jim, he lives in Syracuse, Taxi Mangus. He turned me on to you, Mr. Smith, and your show. And I'll tell you, the information you have on here and the guests you have more's got to be told to the people, the general public. You know, too much is kept from the people.
Well, that's true. But now, you know, we're to blame for some of that. You know that.
Correct. Because we voted these jerks in.
Well, not only that. We set up a system and supported a system that hires people to lie to us. They take an oath to do so, and then we complain about it. Now, it's up to us who own the government to restructure that if we don't like it. And so a lot of times what happens is we set up a system and then complain about the system. And I'll give you this is a very low level, but a very real example.
there are people all over the United States that absolutely hate tobacco, right?
Correct.
And so they support every kind of possible law that comes along that can kick tobacco in the teeth again. All right? And I'm not saying they shouldn't, but they then vote in these laws that say, well, if you're going to buy tobacco, you have to show your ID. And then they strengthen it and say, well, if you're going to buy cigarette lighters, you have to show your ID. Now, that's very real. It's in a lot of states. And then, well, if you're going to buy matches, you have to show your ID.
You're right.
Now, they're having a barbecue at their house, and they're buying supplies for the barbecue. And they say, oh, by the way, I need to pick up some matches. So they pick up some matches. They get to the checkout. The lady has left her purse out in the car, which was not real smart, but she left it out there. And at the counter, they say, okay, I need to see some ID for these matches. She goes ballistic. But she voted for that law.
Yep.
Now, that's what we've done to ourselves.
Yeah.
Okay? We've done it to ourselves, and we have to work our way out of it. Andrew, thank you for the call, man.
Thank you very much, man. And Mr. Hoagland, you're great, man.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you.
You know, Kevin, I need to make an announcement tonight.
All right.
I'm someone who believes in putting my mouth where my mouth is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have been invited to address the Libertarian National Nominating Convention in Denver in less than a month on Friday evening, the 23rd of May. I'm giving one of the keynotes. And I'm going to be talking about a number of the things that we've discussed on the show tonight, particularly the relevance of a NASA which is not now doing any fundamental R&D for the benefit of the American people. I mean, it used to be that NASA had a nice chunk of change set aside to do really sky blue stuff. They are not doing anything beyond what you see on television, which is going to do nothing for the American people and for the American economy and for the American future and the future of the planet. So I'm going to go to this convention in about a month, and I'm going to propose that we abolish NASA.
You know what? You proposed that on this show one time.
I think I did.
Yes, you did.
I'm going to talk about, do we still need NASA? I'm going to talk about all the things that NASA has been keeping secret from the American people that could change radically the equation. I mean, we have this election coming up, and it's not an airy-fairy academic exercise. Whoever we elect is going to determine what happens up to the run-up to 2012 with some fundamental planetary issues. And the things that Joseph and I and your other guests discuss are kept out of the mainstream because no one ever brings them into the mainstream. Well, I'm going to be there with a bunch of national media, and I'm going to have a lot of the remarkable images taken from Dark Mission as well as some that are not in Dark Mission. I'm going to give some hints about what might be in the next book that Joseph and Mike and I are talking about doing, and I'm going to see if I can make a dent in the mainstream consciousness by relating what NASA is not doing to what it needs to be doing for the good of the American enterprise.
Well, I wish you well. I've seen several videos of speeches and lectures that you have done, and you always do a great presentation, and I wish you well with that. Let's go back
if
to the phone line.
More, mm-hmm. they can go to our website, enterprisemission.com. We have a big banner, and it will take you to the convention. Anybody can come. You know, they're inviting anybody that wants to come to come on over. So if you're in Denver on the 23rd of May, by all means, you know, take a look at the website and just click on the banner at the top and join the party, because I think it's going to be an interesting evening.
I would bet that it will be. All right, folks, let's go back to the phone line. Folks, the telephone number is 1-800-289-1092, and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
This is Charles in Albuquerque.
Yes, Charles.
Well, good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Hello. I gathered in that we know that there are a great number of people, all the people, many of the people at NASA included, that know a lot about UFOs and technology that they're keeping entirely from us.
and they're not willing to share it at all with us. And there's a lot of people. Maybe it's because they know something that it's too terrible to actually to share with the rest of us, and it really would harm our society. Have you ever given that angle any thought?
Well, it's something that I have thought a lot about, and I must say that I ultimately do not agree, because if you really believe in Jeffersonian democracy, if you believe in the American experiment, if you believe in the astonishing breakthroughs of tradition that was represented by the Founding Fathers 250-plus years ago, then there are no secrets that cannot be told and shared with the electorate. Otherwise, what good is representative government?
Well,
you know, are
America,
we only supposed to be allowed to know certain things? The fact is that if you believe in that philosophy, then you also believe in the philosophy that if there are terrible things that we can't be told, it's because basically there's not a damn thing we can do about it anyway, so ignorance is bliss. And as Joseph and I can attest from totally separate directions, there is virtually no limit to what this physics and this technology cannot do if it's appropriately applied.
Right.
So the position that I'm taking is that we're being told, well, we're not telling you for your own good, and that is one of the fundamental lies.
Right. And I have to go even further. You know, if we really believe in the sovereignty of the individual person, then it really is up to that person to make up their mind as to what's good for them and what isn't. And that's really the bottom line for any really functional representative republic such as we have. So I have to agree with Mr. Hoagland on that one.
Well, aren't you worried that some really bad people somewhere, not in this country, not in this democracy, but somewhere else on Earth, might get a hold of this technology and use it for their own evil purposes?
Yeah, the problem with that line of reasoning is they're more likely to do it if we don't know about it than if we do know about it. Remember, this is not being kept secret from those that really want to know. It's only being kept from secret from those that don't know what they don't know.
Yep.
So, all right. Charles, let me ask you a question. Do you think that, and I'm asking this because I really want to know, let's say, we'll just call it X. There is this device. It is the X device. It's got tremendous powers, whatever they may be. Do you think that other nations do not know that we have X?
I seriously doubt if we have some device that is so extremely powerful. I think there are a lot of people that don't know about it. We don't know about it. I mean, if there is such a device, we are not seeing any evidence of its use. And one would think if a nation possessed such a thing, they would use it at some point.
Hmm. Okay. Food for thought. We're into a break, and as you know, that means our mics are going dead here in a few seconds.
Okay.
So thank you for the call. Gentlemen, I'll rejoin you on the other side of this break. Ladies and gentlemen, Richard Hoagland and Joseph Farrell, Cosmic War, Exploded Planet, and the Future. We'll be back right after this.
Night, all these thoughts keep slipping through my mind. All these years of feeding false hopes, I've heard nothing but the rain. Most of the time, life is full of endless lies that we somehow believe to. Truth, things seem right,
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
We are back, and let's go straight to the phone line. Caller, your first name and where are you calling from?
Hello, Kevin. This is Tony from Oklahoma.
Okay. Tony, we'll have to keep this kind of short because we're on final approach here.
Okay. Two things. That last caller, I think his name was Charles.
Okay.
It sounded to me just a little bit like Eisenhower.
Okay.
And Mr. Hoagland, what a pleasure to talk to you. Unbelievable. Have you ever heard of Walter Cronkite's sighting or encounter with a UFO?
I've heard the story of his being taken to an island during after the war.
Yes.
Yeah. We never discussed it personally. He didn't know that I was interested in this because I really wasn't that interested back when I worked with him. It would be intriguing to ask him about it now, you know, while he's still with us. But no, it never came up in the conversation, but I am aware of the story.
I could send it to you if you want.
Oh, I already have it. I have it in a file. I actually think I have I think there's a YouTube version or something. You know,
right.
I've seen it.
I can't remember.
You know, someone asked me
website.
Some months ago if we had ever talked about it, and I said, no, it never came up.
Okay, Tony, thank you for the call. Gentlemen, I have some flash messages that I need us to get to, and we're going to run out of time. We'll have to keep it real short. This one is from Australia. Does the Sumerian text describe a zero-point energy device?
Well, yeah, if you take zero-point energy in a very loose sense, they certainly do. And, in fact, in the Cosmic War, I spend a whole chapter examining from the standpoint of kind of a speculative physics reconstruction of what I think the Tablets of Destinies were. So, yes, the answer is.
Okay, this one, I don't know who it's addressed to. I guess both of you. It's pretty long, and I'm just choosing one of the issues out of here. This one also from Australia.
Report,
yeah. Who will be coming to Earth, Darth Vader or Luke Skywalker?
You know, actually, that's not a silly question, because when I found the stuff that I found that led to the soap opera, led to the section of monuments called Is There a Terrestrial Connection, etc., I have this epiphany, and I think that Joseph had the same one, which is that we're not dealing with aliens. We're dealing with extraterrestrials, which is a radical difference. Let me define the difference. Aliens don't have your DNA. They're not your grandmother. They're not your grandfather. They're not relatives at all. ETs just hang their hat on a different piece of real estate. They're as human as you and I and everybody listening. Well, almost everybody listening. And the point is that if we are going to see ETs, the odds are overwhelming that they're going to be our guys. And look what our guys have done to written history over the last 6,000 years. So it really is a crapshoot. There's nothing that says they're going to be angels and nothing that says they're going to be devils. They're going to be humans with super weapons and technology and knowledge and physics, and that's the problem because the meeting is totally unequal, and that's why this knowledge, which is held in stewardship by a tiny handful of self-proclaimed elites, has got to be democratized as rapidly as possible for the benefit of all mankind.
Yep, okay. I have to agree.
What about this one? This one also from Australia. It says, "Hi, Kevin. I think this cosmic war might still be going on in other dimensions. What do you guys think?"
My answer would be possibly yes.
What do you think, Richard?
Joseph is right. I think we're still in it. I think part of the way the cosmic wars proceed, or this one has proceeded. You remember the original Star Trek? Remember Gene Roddenberry's original show?
Yeah.
Remember the shows that the fans hated the most, which was when Gene tried to extrapolate the Cold War to some other planetary situation?
Mm-hmm.
Remember the Yanks and the Combs? Remember the one where McCoy had to go down and deliver the baby from the Klan leader, and the Klingons were providing weapons, and the Federation was going to try to get the guys to go on their side? And I mean, didn't that kind of ring of Vietnam and ring of Iraq now and Turkey and Iran? In other words, if you want to screw up terrestrial politics and you're an ET and you're related and you want to keep human beings down the farm, you keep them fighting with each other so they don't look up and say, oh, my God, the real bad guys are out there.
Yep.
So you think it's very possible it could still be going on?
Oh, yeah.
And it's being done by deceit and political deception and some super intelligence agencies. And in other words, yeah. And the question then is, where's the evidence? And that's a whole other set of shows, Kevin.
All right, gentlemen, we've got about 3 minutes. Let me say to our audience that if you go to my website...
Did we lose you?
I'm sorry? No. You didn't lose me.
No, I'm here.
Okay. If you go to my website and you look under each of these gentlemen's photograph, you see their name. If you click on the name, it takes you to their website. All right? And you want to be sure you go and visit. But I want to give each of you the opportunity to tell us how the URL, the address, and how to get your books. So, Joseph Farrell, you go first.
My website is www.GizaDeathStar.com. That's all one word. It's all lowercase. And my books are available from Adventures Unlimited Press. And business time phone number is 1-800-718-4514. And there is a 10% discount on three or more books.
Okay. And Richard, if you will, your books and your web address. Hello, Richard? I guess we lost him.
We lost him.
I don't know what happened. Okay.
I don't know either.
Well, let me say that his web address is www.enterprisemission.com, and he has graphics on the website about his books. If you click those, it'll take you to where you can purchase them. And I don't know what happened, but we lost Richard Hoagland. Let me say I appreciate him for being on the air with us tonight. And, Joseph, I appreciate you for being on the air with us tonight.
Thank you for having us back on.
Well, we have broken a whole lot of new ground for a lot of audience.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you something, it's fascinating stuff. Do you expect that we are going to see with our own eyes this war break out again?
Oh, good question. And my gut instinct at the present time is yes, unfortunately. But I'm hoping and certainly praying that that's not the case.
Do you think that it's possible that our people are prepared technologically for that?
I think that they have made every effort to be prepared for this, yes. As to whether or not their preparations are going to be ultimately adequate, that's another matter.
Do you think, I don't have time for, let me just ask. Do you think that beyond 2012, we are going to come out of this thing, whatever it is, we're going to come out of this thing as winners?
Well, let me put it this way. I think Richard's take on 2012 is probably true, and that is that the good people are going to probably end up getting better and the bad ones worse. As to whether or not we're going to come out on top, that I couldn't tell you. My guess is it's going to be very messy. Let's put it that way.
All right. Stay on the line with me for just a moment, if you will. And folks, another edition of the Kevin Smith Show must come to a close. We are out of time, all right?
My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. I'll be back tomorrow. You be here too, and we'll have a great time. Until then, so long, everybody.